Hey guys, welcome back to Percussion Perspective. This is Kevin.
You probably just scared a bunch of people. This is Remy. What's up, guys?
This is episode number 12, and today we're going to be chatting about tips for a cleaner drumline. We are in it right now where we're every day of the week, we're trying to make our drumlines cleaner, and so we're going to just talk about some tips, some rehearsal strategies, etc., on making your drumline cleaner as a whole.
Yeah, in the same way that I don't know how to make a brass line sound cleaner, a lot of you guys probably don't really know how to make a drumline sound cleaner. And we should probably just say real quick, when we say clean, like, we mean not dirty. We want it to sound like if you have, you know, five snare drums, you want it to sound like one snare drum. If you have it's the same thing, you know, anytime you want it to line up vertically and sound clean and be understandable and not sound terrible. So that's what we mean when we say clean.
Yeah. And if you have five basses, you want it to sound like one bass, like one quiet little bass drum.
Yeah. Unless they're playing splits.
Yeah.
Which they do most of the time.
So, So just hopefully we can have some tips here that'll be kind of useful. So, number one I've got is use a metronome as much as possible. And I'm going to say right off the bat that I have not done that great at that this year, because we kind of don't really have that fantastic of a, like, we don't have enough speakers and stuff like that to move around. When we play together as a front ensemble in a drumline, we definitely have a met going, cause we use the sound system that the front ensemble uses. But, if you want your drumline to play really clean together, use a metronome, have the center snare be like the main listener of that metronome. And then you've got your snares listening into that and tenors in and down the line and stuff like that. So if you're not using a met like I have been, you're not going to be as clean as you should be.
You got to practice what you preach.
I know.
Yeah, we use a met every day. We're lucky, and we've got like three or four different, little anchor, you know, like, they'll do Bluetooth through my phone, or they'll take a Dr. Beat. So yeah, use a metronome, and put that metronome, like Kevin said, talking about the order of listening, put that metronome right next to your center snare, either right behind or right, you know, right, like lean it on their carrier if they're using stands, but put that sound right in the middle of the ensemble. And then that is the only person that should listen to that metronome. Everybody else should listen to the center snare player. So the snares on the outside are listening in towards the middle. The bass drums are listening over or forward to the snares, and the quads are listening over to that snare sound as well. And that's going to make everything be as close to clean as possible.
Yep. That's right. Kind of the next tip I've got, sorry, I'm kind of laughing because I'm watching Remy with a muted camera or muted microphone, like coughing like a maniac.
Yeah, I'm still a little bit sick here. I'm just muting myself.
Oh man. Yeah, I'll do another one and then you can take one. But these are kind of three little things that you're to make sure your kids are doing to play cleaner. So kind of three in one, but make sure you're dudding, you know, during rests, if you're doing show music or exercises, if there's rests, they need to be internalizing, or I guess that would be externalizing the beat together, by dudding on rests and stuff like that. And before your exercise starts, something really rough, I'll have them stop using their feet for a minute just to kind of get their hands locked in, and then put the feet back in. But everything we do from pretty much day one, I tell them to have their feet moving, because that's going to all obviously transition onto the field with their show music. So they just need to get extremely comfortable moving their feet. And then the third one involved in that is having their eyes focused on just kind of something straight in front of them. I don't really let my kids move around like or their eyes. I don't let them like move their eyes around the room, because they're just going to be focused on all these little micro things that their eyes notice, and they're not focusing on their music. So just have them look straight ahead. And that'll like trigger their brain to kind of just focus on what they're hearing way more than kind of what their eyes are. You know, it's kind of like, isn't that a thing where you like lower like one of your senses to strengthen another or something.
Yeah, like they that. Talk about, like, you know, people that are blind, are their other senses are heightened, or people that are deaf, their other senses are heightened. Yeah, I had a teacher in high school, actually. We called it stone faces, you know, just kind of expressionless. And you go watch most of the DCI groups, and unless they have specifically been told to perform a certain character in that moment, most of the time they're just eyes forward and focused. And one thing that I found helpful was to try to find a point, like the smallest point that I could find, you know, straight out in front of me. So sometimes it was like the corner of a brick building, or a certain point on a on a limb of a tree or something, just like something small that was just, I could just focus on and just stare at that, to almost kind of like zone out visually so that your ears are going to, you know, engage more. Those are all really good. Those are all super practical. I feel like mine are not as practical. Mine are a little bit different. So the first one I've got is establish terminology. And this kind of goes back to some of our previous episodes, but things like a check pattern and your stroke types and the terminology that we use to talk about our grip, terminology that we use to talk about stick height, and then the weight, like how we're playing into the drum. So real quick, like, check pattern would be sort of removing all of the flams, diddles, sometimes accents. Usually accents are going to stay in there, but just kind of boiling a measure or a passage down to its most basic element. Sometimes people will call this like a skeleton pattern, but I usually call it a check. And making sure that your students know, like, hey, can we check that measure? Can we check that snares? And, you know, taking away the difficult things from that measure, just to see, are we even playing the underlying rhythm together first? And then once you get that, then you can start, okay, let's add the rolls back in, or let's add the flams back in, things like that. Stroke types, you know, we did a whole episode on that. So make sure that your rebound down, tap up, that all your kids know exactly what you mean when you say that. As far as grip, you know, you have front of hand, back of hand, you have your fulcrum, everybody kind of will talk about grip a little bit differently, but just making sure that your students are understanding what you're talking about. Stick heights, you've got we use a number system. So 3, 6, 9, 12, as far as dynamics, and we'll talk about heights a little bit later. And then just playing with the correct weight, you know, make sure that your students understand kind of like the difference between weight and velocity and how to approach playing. Making sure that they're hitting the drum with the same force, because that's another one that we'll talk about later. If they're not playing with the same approach, they're not playing with the same balance, then even if they're playing at the exact same time, it's going to sound dirty. So all that terminology, you know, just helps you communicate more effectively with your kids.
I have a kid who's
congrats.
Playing. Not like that. I have a kid marching.
You've never told me.
I have a kid marching snare for the first time this year, and most of the things that, you know, over the last week that have been dirty, quote unquote dirty. I look and it's like, it's the same thing you just said. Like, it's the approach to playing the instrument is just a little different. And as soon as I tell him to like beef it up a little bit, it starts to clean itself up a little bit. I've got two that are a little more experienced, and then one that's just new. And anytime you've got a new kid on something like that, it's going to be a little different approach. And so, like you said, that's exactly right. Like, the approach to the instrument, whether it's snare, tenor, bass, can change the cleanliness of the music. So just make sure all your kids are playing pretty clean. And hopefully when you've had them since beginning band, you can kind of fix all that on a practice pad, but it is different when they kind of get on a marching instrument for the first time. But that's all really good. Your terminology will make a rehearsal flow really well too, and kind of move faster.
Yeah, for sure. I'll go into this next one too, since I'm not currently coughing to death. The next one, and I use this all the time. So use buzzes, replace diddles, with buzzes, make sure that your kids are matching length. And so we would call this like a press buzz or a tight buzz or a staccato buzz or whatever. But in, you know, if you're repping a section of the show that has a lot of triplet rolls, or you're just even repping exercises, like my students, any roll exercise, we always start with at least one or two reps of just buzzing. So we play the exact exercise, but anywhere there's a diddle, they just know to drop in a buzz. And we do that for a few reps. And that's sort of like a halfway point between the check and the actual exercise, or the check and the actual music. Because a buzz is really similar to a diddle in the hand, but it's a little bit more definite. You can tell when it's exact, you know, it should line up exactly in that 16th bass check pattern or the triplet bass check pattern or whatever rhythms you're playing. So if they can replace those, you know, maybe everyone's not going to have the exact same spacing on their diddles. And diddles are just like fast doubles, right? So if you're playing like right, left, da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da, right, left, da-da-da-da-da. So your big motion is staying the same, but you're doubling your notes on each hand. So not everyone's going to have the same spacing all the time. And an easy way to sort of home in on that is replacing those with buzzes. And then eventually you can start adding those diddles back in, you know, kind of when the beginning of the buzz, when they're all starting together and they're matching the length of those buzzes. This is definitely not like a concert snare drum buzz. You don't want chut, 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 is it. You don't want long buzzes there. You want them to be as short as possible.
Yeah. And this made me think of something else kind of coming off of that. If you do have a buzz roll that's like written in your show music, you know, generally like that might be the first thing your drumline will play for the show. Snares will go like buzz, entrances. And the tenors will go buzz, and your bass drums will go buh, 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 like yeah, into, you just described
every show I've ever written.
Yeah, into the hit. So just make sure they're all playing the same check pattern underneath that buzz roll. So if you're, depending upon what your tempo is, that'll help the entrance and the exit of that roll be really clean. So, you know, if you need to go like da 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 da, or if it's faster, you might do 16ths or vice versa, whatever. So make sure that they're checking that buzz roll really clean. I haven't done the buzz roll thing as much this year so far with like a triple roll exercise. I need to do a little bit of that this week, 'cause that'll help with timing. I kind of forget about that one a little bit.
Yeah. That's our bread and butter. Do you guys still play Stilly Rolls?
No, I got like a version of Fred. I don't have the music. Will you send
you
it to
have
me
it anymore? I'll send it to you. Yeah.
Yeah,
that's a good tip. When I write, I always put in like, I used to just write out the rhythm with buzzes. Mm-hmm. And then this year I just started writing out the duration, and then putting like, if they need to be sixes, I'll just put like a text above it that says six.
Yeah.
Or if they're going to be fours, and that's been a lot faster, rather than doing like an entire, you know, two beats of six tuplets and then buzzes on all of them. But yeah, that's a good tip there. All right, what else you got?
And the kids, most of the, like, I think my kids nowadays kind of just know, they figure it out. Like, they know what it should be. If we've done
just whatever's going to be comfortable.
My next one is have a really solid, this kind of goes back to, I guess, like making sure that, you know, would you say stone face?
Yeah. Stone face.
Making sure that they're focused, but have like the very first thing that you play, which is, you know, should be some version of eights of rebound strokes, stuff like that. Legatos, whatever you want to call them. So I always start with that. And even if I don't intend to go through every single one of my warmups before a sectional or whatever, I always do that. And so I think have a solid warmup that your kids know you're going to play every day, and they know it down to their bones, and they've memorized it, and they can play it in their sleep, so that they can really get a high level of focus going into the rest of the sectional. I think that's a good way. It's like, if you're coming back from lunch and you're playing, it's 12:30, boom, start playing the exercise. You know, you play it for 4 or 5 minutes, and then they're focused and ready to go. So I think that's good. I think if you don't have that, the kids kind of don't really know what's going to happen, and they're just, I don't know, it's not going to be as focused the rest of rehearsals. So that's worked for me.
Yeah, that just goes in with like kind of treating it as a classroom and going for that consistency, you know, if you kind of start every day with the same ritual, it gets everybody in the right mindset. So, I like that tip a lot too. We will sometimes, like after a longer break, we won't go all the way back to eights. We might just start with like my go-to is like, oh, we've already been playing for like 3 hours or so today. So when we start back, we're going to start with like stick control, which is like the third exercise in our packet. And it does start with like, it's just controlling the four stroke types, you know?
Yeah.
It's like their hands are already warm. They've already been playing a lot. We need to go back and play 8-8-16, but we're going to play some stick control and then move on from there. But we've done that so often too, that's kind of like one of those, we're starting a new block of rehearsal, so we're going to focus in on this one exercise first.
Do you guys, do you play something in like your morning chunk?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. So we'll do like a quick warm up together with the front ensemble for 20 or 30 minutes or whatever. We started that this year. That's something that we, as a staff, we're like, we want to start the day playing. And then we go outside, they do visual rehearsal for a while. And then we might've talked about this the other day on our week one update. But once I start noticing the full band visual rehearsals starting to differ from what the battery kids really need, I pull them and we just go track. And once they start dancing. Yeah. Yeah. Once they start, I let them do a little bit of that. Cause my kids do, I think they do enjoy, you know, we got new drums this year and new carriers, and they're going to be more secure on their bodies. So we're going to be able to do a little bit more movement this year. So I want them to get some of that experience, but, we play quite a bit, especially like the last half of the morning.
Yeah. Do those pearl harnesses have that belt?
Yeah. They don't have the little whale tail thing.
Okay.
Like the little, that the Randall may have.
Yeah. I know what you're talking about.
We call them whale tails. I don't know what everyone else calls them.
I think they called them blades.
And those are really great. They're really great for your posture.
Like you have to like, every time you have to like have a buddy,
use a drum stick.
Yeah. You have to have like a buddy do it. It's kind of like
putting
on your marching band uniform. You have to have somebody zip you up.
Yeah. But yeah, these pearls have like built in hip belts. They're pretty nice.
Sweet.
And they're a lot less to go wrong.
Yeah.
I'll just say that.
Yeah.
Understood. All right, cool. Let's move on. Next one. Don't just clean your show music. Clean your exercise packet and make it stay that way. So, you know, you're halfway through the season and you have a rep of a roll exercise and it's dirty. Like, don't move on from that. You know, you have to keep those standards up all the time. And, you know, we talk about the first couple weeks of band camp, you're really kind of setting the trajectory. So, you know, if you set it at a 45 degree angle, or what, you know, whatever you want to think. If you're thinking about like a graph, like a line graph, if you set that going up at a 45 degree angle, then by the end of the season, like you're going to be really great. But if you set your trajectory low and early on in the season, you don't really clean those exercises. You don't really get them under your hands. You don't spend the time to make sure that everybody can play their part in the packet. That's not going to come through in the show music. And I know we've talked about in the past, making sure that your packet kind of lines up with, you know, the right skill sets that they need to play in their show music. So things like rolls and inner beats and accent patterns and, you know, putting some rim shots in there so that they're used to it. Bass drums need to have a really good variety of split and unison stuff. Cause bass drums don't just play unison and they don't just play split. They have to go back and forth. They need to be able to move from the drum to the rim for rim clicks and things like that. So, clean all of that exercise packet as well so that they know, you know, that's the standard. And then, like I said, if you get halfway through the season and are still having dirty reps on an exercise, like you got to take time to stop and fix that and then make sure that that immediately applies to the show. One thing that I didn't put down, but it's sort of related to this. Hopefully you have if you don't, that's okay. Maybe you don't know. But hopefully you have like tempos or tempi, you know, that you start each exercise at, and then maybe you have a progression. So like we start triplet rolls at 132 and then we move to 144 and then we move to like 156 or 160, this early on where, you know, we can't really play at 160, this early in the season super well, but we can definitely buzz through at that tempo. But you know, if your opener is at 164, like there's no reason to rep triplet rolls at 160, rep it at 164. Like you can adjust those tempos to your show tempos and just save that for the year. And it's like, so, you know, in our opener, our tempos are like 132 and 90. There's like a section that's a different tempo. And so we usually do our 16th roll exercise at like 104, but I've bumped it down to 90 so that we can get used to playing like those fat, beefy rolls, which is a new restaurant I'm opening, by the way. And anyway,
are you going to throw them?
Well, yeah. Kind of like Lambert's.
Yeah.
They need to give us a, send us a check for Buzz Marketing. Anyway, does that make sense what I'm saying? Like adjust your tempo of your exercises to match your show music.
Yeah. I mean, the point
helps it even more.
Yeah. The point of the exercises is like preparing to play your show music clean. So yeah, right. That's a good tip. I mean, I've never really, sometimes I think about that, but that's not on the forefront of my brain all the time, is to think like, oh, we're going to have to do triplet rolls at blah, blah, blah tempo. So we need to work on it at blah, blah, blah tempo. I just kind of think about making the rolls clean. And the more you do it at that show tempo, they're going to be locking them in on the show music probably twice as fast and easier. So that's a good one.
Yeah, I've had success with that for sure.
That's cool.
Because the exercise is a little bit less intimidating sometimes than the show music. It's like, you know, triplet rolls, they're playing triplets the entire time. They're not having to go back and forth between duple and triple and fives and different shots and stuff. Yeah. And their subdivision is staying the same. So if you can work on that exercise at a long period of time at the show tempo, then when we get there, that muscle memory is just, you know, just ingrained a little bit more.
I mean, this is good for like everything you ever do, but having good rehearsal culture, but specifically to drumline, the kids need to know, you know, when they're going to stay set, when they're going to relax, when it's okay to talk, when it's okay to hack, which is never okay to hack actually. But, just like, were you going to say something?
I just said, it's never okay to hack.
Let me know when you want to say yeah. So I'll kind of stop, just raise your hand or something.
Okay. I'd like to say yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah.
Okay, cool. Yeah. So, you know, things like at the end of an exercise, like what are you doing? Are you just like standing there? You're raising your hand again. You're annoying.
I'm just kidding. Keep going.
So like, yeah, like when you finish a rep of show music or an exercise, like what's going to happen? Do they stay set? Are their sticks out in? Do they relax immediately? They shouldn't relax immediately, so don't do that. All those little things, whatever you want to do, like figure it out and be consistent with it all through band camp and all through the year. Just having your kids be in the same mindset and having the same standards for themselves, with music and with just like rehearsal strategies, we'll kind of just have them all more ingrained and feel more like a team. And it's all going to lead into playing well together, and they're going to get along better because they all have the same standard. It kind of makes them feel a little more elite, I guess, in more ways than just playing well. They have like, they look good and they rehearse well, and that'll lead into full band rehearsal being, you know, a little bit better because the drum line will have a good standard of of rehearsal etiquette and stuff like that. So, yeah.
That's I always want my kids to be the example. Like when we're in full coordination with the winds and guard, I always want the percussionists to be the example of like, you know, they run back to their spot, they play their rep, they don't just immediately turn to the, you know, snare or whoever next to them and are like, oh, did you hear that roll? It was so dirty. Ha ha ha. Like they like just kind of silently think like, what can I do better? Like what did I mess up on that rep? So that when we go back and do it, I can make sure that I don't, you know, I can make one thing better. We talk about that all the time. Like just make one thing every time you do something, just try to do one thing better each time. And eventually you'll get really good. So,
and my,
that culture is really important.
Yeah. And my kids are not that bad at it. They're pretty good. They just, and if I ever have to be a little like, hey guys, stop talking. It's generally like my captain is like showing a kid something like, hey, you were kind of like
trying
too
to help.
Like it's normally 90% of the time positive, but it's just like, there's four different conversations happening and I'm trying to give instruction or whatever. So I just don't let it get crazy.
Too many cooks in the kitchen type thing. How do you split? Do you have like one section? You have like a captain and then do you have like a section leader for each section?
No.
Like one snare, one. One quad, one bass, one front like, ensemble.
Right. Thanks for breaking that down for me. I appreciate that.
I didn't know if you remembered all the instruments.
Triangle section leader. I've got like a drumline captain. We have like leadership. So the kids have to like apply to be on leadership of our band program. And that's another tip. If your band program doesn't have like a really solid leadership team, you should do that right now. Cause it's amazing.
We'll wait for you,
but we want them to establish it right now and then we'll come back.
Yeah.
We come back 4 years later. Back. My center snare is a leadership team member. And I had a girl that was going to play tenors. She was going to be a senior and she quit. She was going to be on leadership. So, technically I don't have like a tenor captain, but I do have one that has more experience than the other, that will be helpful. And then we do have a leadership team member on bass. So I say like, you are the bass drum captain. You are the tenor captain. We just have like a drumline captain and we have like leadership team members spread out throughout the front ensemble and the battery. So.
Gotcha. I was just curious. That doesn't really have anything to do with making a drumline clean, but that's basically
it can be if you have to like, you know, if you're sending kids out for a quick sectional and you can trust that captain.
Yeah.
Or something like that. But
yeah, I guess what you could say is make sure your center snare has good diddle and terp.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anyways. Okay, next one. Is it my turn? Your turn? My turn.
Go for it.
My turn. Michael Scott. Mesh Monday. So this is something that Kevin and I, Mr. Mazarko and myself. We did this in college on the Oklahoma State drumline. That is a fantastic drumline. And we'd had Mesh Mondays. So we would have, you know, instead of having all the snares stand in a line and then all the quads stand in a line that's connected to that line or, you know, taking an angle off of that line, we would do like a big arc in front of the bass drums. And it would be like, snare, quad, snare, snare, quad, snare, snare, quad, you know, kind of like you have to distribute it evenly based on how many snares and quads you have. But say you have three snares and two quads, then you'd have one snare in the middle, a quad on each side of that snare, and then a snare on the outside of each of those quads so that they're alternating instruments. And you call that meshing. Sometimes, you know, drill riders will do that. But they usually don't do it for this purpose. They just do it because they think it'll look cool or something. And then they're like, you know, your snares are like eight steps away from each other and you're like, okay, well, this isn't going to work. But anyway, this is like, you know, you're still at like a stick in a fist or two step interval or whatever. You're close in your warm up arc. But you know, your snares and quads are alternating and you just run your warm up and your show music just like you do every day, but it forces them to listen across. So they have to kind of listen through that snare drum sound to the other quad players, or they have to listen through that quad sound to the other snare players to kind of hear their part. And it just kind of helps, you know, like nudges their ear to like, they have to be even more attentive to that. And then another thing that it does, you know, snares and quads don't always play the exact same part. But a lot of the times, you know, they will have licks together. And so you want those rolls to also be clean between the snares and the tenors. And so it just kind of makes them more aware of like, oh, I'm standing right next to the quad player and they are playing the same part as me just across, you know, five or six drums or whatever. You don't really mesh bass drums. I mean, I guess you could and work on like a unison exercise, like a stick control exercise where everything's unison or double beat unison or something. I've never really done that. I've never found that I needed to do that, but bass drums should just always, you know, stay in ascending or descending order so that their splits kind of make geographical sense. But yeah, we don't do this as much as I'd like to. I need to make sure that we are more consistent about this year. But we've done it in the past and the kids usually think it's kind of cool. And, it's like, oh, it's Mesh Monday, guys. And they, you know, they mesh. So anyway, do Mesh Monday. That helps a lot. That's a pretty old school technique, I think, that we both learned from our teacher.
Yeah.
We should have him on as a guest sometime.
Yeah. He can pay us $30,000.
Yeah, at least.
I'm just kidding. That'd be cool. Yeah, I haven't done that yet, but I'll probably try that. I'm probably going to end up using a few of these tips this week that I haven't
same.
Quite thought about. You know, it's hard sometimes when you're just trying to survive and make it through the week. And
it's hard. It's so
hard. And just like you're just trying to get as clean as you can. So sometimes your brain's not thinking about all those other ideas you used to have that you used to use.
Well, and when you're the one guy, you get kind of over all of the percussion, it's a lot to think about.
Yeah.
We always talk about this, you know, mostly at least half the reason that we do this podcast is so that we are getting better at what we're doing too. Just kind of gives us a space to talk about other stuff.
Yeah. Make sure you give a lot of kids feedback, like quick feedback. If you're just repping through stuff and you're not like teaching, like feedback is teaching. So if you're just kind of starting the met saying go, moving on, never teaching, then the kids are not going to, you're not going to get any better. So
run it again.
Yeah. Yeah. Just make sure you're
sometimes
actually
need it.
I mean, yes. And it's going to lead into my next thing that I'll get to in a second, but especially if you've got new kids that are struggling, I mean, give them tips, write stuff down, have them go home and work on these little things because that's what Bandcamp is for. I mean, just make sure you're teaching, make sure you're actually giving feedback. So these kids aren't just like going home with no information. They should be going home with like a lot of information to fix their technique issue or their playing issue or whatever. So, and then kind of the opposite of that, sometimes reps are all you need to clean something up. So sometimes you don't really have to sit there and like give a 5-minute spiel on a downstroke. You can just be like, hey, we're going to rep this about 10, 15, 20 times. And, you know, a kid can figure out their flaw and fix it. And then they have 10 more reps to kind of get it locked in. But there's been plenty of times where nothing's wrong technique wise. It's just, they need to rep it and they need to listen to each other and know their tendencies and be able to adjust in the moment. So sometimes you need to teach a lot. Sometimes you need to rep a lot. You can kind of just figure out in the moment what you think's probably going to need to happen, but sometimes they just need to play a lot and it'll fix an issue.
Yeah. Sometimes I struggle with that. Like, you know, certain kids, sometimes it's like, I really need to say stuff to this kid, but maybe the personality type that kid has, they sort of like start to shut down or they feel like you're picking on them because you're like giving them so much advice and they end up kind of thinking like, oh, well I must stink because he keeps telling me to do this and this and this and this. And it's like, you know, that kid still needs that info. That might be a time to pull that kid aside, you know, during a break and say like, hey, I think you're doing a really great job. Like I want you to know I'm not picking on you. I'm just trying to help. And most of the time that kid is going to be like a rookie or, younger than everybody or on a new instrument or whatever. So they're obviously the one that is behind. And it's not always rookies. Like this year I have, I've got some kids that are on instruments for first year that are doing better than, you know, that are doing better than others, but
give me exact names right now.
Okay. Well, let's see. I'm not going to do that anyway. I don't think they listen to this, but, it's like, you know, they know that everybody yeah. knows any, yeah. anyways, but no one's doing a bad job this year. So anyway, I better stop.
I feel pretty lucky because I don't have in my drumline right now, I don't have any of those kids that would like break down. I'm really happy that I have the kids that I have who aren't like, they're not whiners where I can kind of be pretty aggressive and say things over and over and they don't get all whiny, which is good.
Yeah. I think I'm building that finally, you know, this is my third year here. So I feel like these are kind of, like these are my kids now. I was kind of like kind of easing into it a little bit over the first couple of years, but now I can just be like, finish my sentence that, and they say sucked. So that's, you know, yeah. Just being able to just be honest and be like, guys, I wasn't good, and have them not be like, Mr. Thornton's a jerk, and they all quit. So, I think they trust me at this point. That's good. Yeah, I got a couple more short ones.
Go for it.
Heights matter, stick heights matter. So we kind of talked about this earlier, but an unbalanced drum line is usually going to be a dirty drum line. So everybody should be playing, you know, pretty much the same height, with the exception of maybe the center snare plays like just a little bit higher than everybody else. Just a little bit louder. But, and if you have a big snare line, like if you've got, you know, 5, 6, 7 out to 9 snares, then you should really kind of have like a pyramid of sound. So like the center should be playing a little bit louder. And then as you go out away from the center, everyone should just be playing just a tad under. That's, you know, that's at least my opinion. I'm sure there are different schools of thought, but you definitely don't want random people sticking out of the texture. The same way that you can like listen to a horn arc and like you can hear like the laser beam tone coming from a trombone and like you can point it out, you know, you don't want a snare drum or a bass drum or a quad player sound to stick out of the texture. So you can have, you know, someone you're practicing those checks, you're practicing your buzzes and adding those diddles in, but if they're all playing at different heights, even if they're playing at the exact same time, you're getting different tone and a different sound out of the drum from your different heights. So it just doesn't balance together and it doesn't work. So making sure that they understand heights and that they're matching heights to the center snare, or they're matching heights, in towards the center.
Which is like, that's, if you don't have that, if you don't have like a certain level of that, I think by the time your kids are in the high school drum line or whatever, that's like that's a 6th grade, 7th grade, 8th grade thing that like,
yeah,
I feel like that hasn't just been solidified because, like one of the tips that I had that we kind of combined them, but yeah, having good, like understanding of stick heights and then your stroke types. Like if you don't have all of that, anytime I have seen any drum line at all that is not playing well, or maybe they're even playing okay, but like their heights are just different. They're like one kid's playing really high, one kid's playing really low. That's just not consistent and it's not going to help those kids play very well together. So I feel like that is probably one of the most important things. If you take anything from this episode, is like stick heights and their stroke types need to just all be as close to perfect as they can from kid to kid.
Yeah. Everything that you're kind of teaching them up to this point, you know, from 6th through 8th grade is really just getting them ready to be able to play at a high level, you know, that is required by competitive marching band, in this part of the country. All right. Yeah. I have one more, maybe two more if I remember. What else do you have here?
I mean, my last one that I had is just if you're, kids are playing really well and you still hear something weird, check your drum tuning. I mean, sometimes that can, or most of the time that can be pretty, significant of an issue. So you want your drums to sound the same.
Yeah, we should probably do an episode on tuning drums eventually. But yeah, like, you know, obviously if you have more than one quad player, those drums need to be tuned to the same pitches. So they can be playing perfectly together. But if they're like, and this happens all the time. So through the week, my quads are not tuned to each other because like one kid plays harder, one kid plays lighter. They're out in the sun. We just got brand new drums. So the heads that are on I've replaced the bass drum and snare heads, but I didn't replace the quad heads. I was just like, we'll just play these till they break. And they're crappy heads because they're factory heads. So they're not holding tension, you know, evenly and blah, 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 blah. But, you know, it's amazing how, like, when you tune those drums up to match each other, it's like, oh, okay, you guys are playing together. But it can, mm-hmm. it can be sound really dirty when you get those kind of conflicting pitches on the same drums. Snares yeah. are the same way, you know, making sure that the bottom heads are all tuned. I tune them to either a C sharp or a D, and then kind of going a little bit more by feel, but you can match pitch on the top heads too. So just making sure that they're at least close, you know, give them as good of a chance as you can.
Yeah,
I did have something on tuning on here. The last one I'll say is just, it's really hard to clean stuff when they are still in the music. I know from experience being a player, I was always able to kind of lock in on the, you know, on listening when it was memorized. When I didn't have like that layer, you know, we talked about zoning out visually. If you're reading music, you're not zoning out visually. You're focusing on that and you're processing that in your brain. And it doesn't mean that it's going to be dirty when you're reading music. But if you really, really want to clean something, the chunks need to be memorized. So, you know, taking a 4-bar phrase, repping it for a little while, and then, hey guys, flip your music over, like, oh, you know, turn your stand around so you can't see it. And let's do 4 more reps of that, and doing things like that, finding small chunks that you can put on the move, you know, in a parking lot and track and start cleaning that way.
Cause it takes it back to the same level as memorizing their show music or their warm-ups,
their exercises. Yeah. It essentially just makes it that
same level.
And obviously the show music is going to be memorized, you know, at some point, because you can't march around on the field with music. I say that I've seen bands that have done that, but, you know, 99% of bands, you know, the expectation is to memorize your music, at least competitive bands.
Right.
And, so yeah, if it's not memorized, it's harder to clean because there is that barrier of I'm still reading music. There's, you know, the music is like a crutch at that point. It's a crutch. Yes,
that's right.
So memorize it and clean it. I think there are a lot of good tips in this one. I hope that the 12 people that listen to it really get a lot of.
Yeah, I think I got all mine. Help. Yeah, and I'm sure there's a lot more that we probably didn't talk about, but those are just kind of generic things to think about if you are a young percussion guy or even experienced. You hopefully maybe have learned something, one thing to help your drumline play cleaner. You got anything else?
Bleach will help clean your drums if they get dirty or something.
Pine Sol is good.
Don't put bleach on your drums.
Mrs. Myers.
Yeah. Seventh generation. I like seventh generation.
What's the little sponge that's a smiley face?
Scrub Daddy.
Yeah. You should. I mean, I keep that in my bag where my drum keys and stuff are.
A Scrub Daddy.
Yeah. Just, you never know.
Get the Yamahas with the Scrub Daddy.
Well, this got weird.
Yeah. All right, guys. Hope you enjoy this episode. Please like and share and subscribe and do all of the things to help us be successful here. If you like the work that we are doing, we're enjoying it. We're having a good time.
Yes,
and I've
got to
write some show
us.
Music this afternoon. So,
oh, fun.
You got anything else, K-Mo?
Nope. That's it. We'll see you guys next time.
Bye.
Thank you.